I think we can get going if we haven't heard otherwise.
Okay. Good afternoon. I would like to call to order the January 4th, 2021 regular session of the Historic Preservation Commission meeting at 5:02 p.m. Mr. Lau, may I have the roll call?
Yes. Vice Chair Beal. I'll try and unmute you there. Dan, give me 1 second.
Present.
Thank you. Commissioner Bozeman. Did not see her pop in. Commissioner Golden. Again, not seeing them. Commissioner Honestad.
He raised his hand, it says.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that. I had to unmute you. Thank you. Commissioner, can you pronounce that for me?
Is it Kruger?
Kruger.
Is that who you're asking?
I'm yes. Present. Yeah. Thank Kruger. You so much. Mm-hmm. That'll be the only time, I promise. Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
And Chair Munden.
Here. Thank you, Mr. Lau. I will now open the meeting to call to audience. During call to audience, you may address the commission on any issue that you wish that is not on the agenda. However, it will not be open for discussion. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At this time, anyone who is participating through video link may raise their hand. Those on the phone, dial 9. Mr. Lau, do we have anyone this evening wishing to address the commission?
You're silent, Brandon.
Thank you, Lenan. I did not hear I did not receive any emails in advance, and it doesn't look like anybody has raised their hand and wished to speak.
If I can just mention for clarification, they don't just press 9, they press *9 or something, right? If they're on the phone. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did that again.
That's okay.
Those on the phone dial *9. I usually make a big star there to raise your hand. We'll give them another second. Okay, thank you. I will now close call to audience. Mr. Lau, the next item.
Sorry, I had to skip to the next page here. Next on the agenda is council liaison comments. Yep. Mr. Solomon?
Mr. Solomon, do you have anything to report today? Is he here?
Councilmember Solomon, we can't hear you. At least I can't.
I can't either.
I'm just going to pop out and pop back in. Seen him come back quite yet here.
He's joined.
There he is. 1 second.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. I've had this happen multiple times. Sometimes you have to leave and rejoin For some reason, the audio doesn't seem to work, but you're hearing me now, Chair? Thank you. Well, great. Happy New Year's to everyone. I just wanted to welcome, I know we're going to have a section later, all our new board members. It was a pleasure interviewing all the applicants, and I think we have some outstanding new members with a wide variety of backgrounds and interests. It's going to add immensely to the Historic Preservation Commission. Looking forward to a really good year. I think you folks are going to get a lot of very good work done. And that's really about all. So thank you very much. And welcome, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Happy holidays to you. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next on our agenda is presentations. Item number one is Historical Society Update, presented by Roxy Johnson, President. And Henry Ziff is the new president of the Historical Society, so Chair Munden, he will be giving the update. Mr. Ziff, I'll go ahead and unmute you.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Ziff, do you have anything to report for us today?
Yeah, I've got a few things. I'd like to just say Happy New Year to everybody. The board of directors, the society met on the 29th of December, and we had an election of officers. Obviously, I'm the new president. Roxy Johnson was elected vice president. Paul Loomis was elected treasurer, and Terry Colmar was elected secretary. Moving on, the Oro Valley Historical Society received certification for the Push House Museum from the Arizona Historical Society. The Push House is now a tier two level, a designation for smaller museums. Moving on to tours at the Steam Pump Ranch, we conducted tours on December 12th and December 19th from 10 a.m. to noon. COVID protocols were followed and all activities were outside. We had five stations with docents giving information about the history of the area and the ranch and its buildings. The turnout was small, but there was a lot of interest in the availability of activity. We plan to continue on the second and fourth Saturdays with more publicity. We will confirm that with Lynn Ann. And the society will contact Lynn Ann to ask to post publicity on the Town of Oro Valley sites and other forms of the of TOV communication. We're trying to finish up with our license agreement with the town for our office space in the Push House. And I believe that we're very close to wrapping that up. And we'll be in contact with Matt to go over the final modifications. And then we're getting very close. Sometime this month, we are going to move the Copper Queen safe, which I'm sure some of you have heard about, into the TAC room. And that's all I have.
Thank you, honey. Thank you, Mr. Ziff. Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry. Mr. Lau, next item, please.
Item number two under presentations is presentation and discussion regarding general board and commission member duties and responsibilities, public records, open meetings, and conflict of interest.
Mr. Standish and Mr. Andrews, I understand you have some instruction for the commission. Mike Standish is town clerk and Joe Andrews is deputy town attorney who will lead the discussion, correct?
Yeah, Chairman, and this is Joe Andrews from the attorney's office. Thank you for the introduction. Mr. Standish, I guess, is going to be running the presentation from his site and adding his bits because he's been so darn busy. I get to carry the presentation and let him tell me where I go wrong. Probably, hopefully that won't happen. Thank you, Chairman Newton and members of the commission. And let's go forward. Go ahead and give me the next slide, Mike. It's pretty simple. It's under the law. Pretty much all municipalities and every part of a municipality and levels of state government other than our legislature, which have opted themselves out of it, are subject to Arizona's open meeting and public records laws. It's all under Title IX. I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of citations. It's just to understand that the state of Arizona does have laws that regulate what are and aren't public records and what we have to do with regard to the open meeting law. Next slide, please, Mike. And by the way, at any time, if any commission member needs to raise their hand, somebody find a way to interrupt me, and I'll be happy to stop and let you ask your question. When it comes down to the open meeting law, and understand this presentation will be heavier on open meeting law than it is on public records, because I think the open meeting law pertains more directly to board and commission members than does the public record law. Back in 2000, and you'll see another slide that talks about it later, it was adopted as a sword and a shield, and I tried to spell it out in this slide. It's a way to give the public a way to understand how meetings are supposed to happen, when they're supposed to happen, and whether or not they actually want to show up. On the other side of it is also to protect public officials, meaning if you've got an agenda and you go through and you follow everything on your agenda and you're not going outside of your agenda, you can find security within the agenda. And we want to make sure that the government, the town of Oro Valley, maintains integrity. And we want to inform our citizenry, and we want to build trust. Now, that seems sometimes counterintuitive when people want to talk about something that's not on the agenda. Nonetheless, these are the purposes that were given by our legislature back in 2000 when they made numerous changes to the public records and open meeting laws. Next slide, Mike. And this slide was done by somebody else, but I like it because what happens is we get people who've been exposed to rules, regulations, open meeting and public record laws from other states or have been part of other organizations. And it's important to know that Arizona has incredibly strong open meeting and public records laws with regard to almost every record we create has to be a public record. Meaning anybody who wants a copy of just about anything the town does with regard to business can get a copy if they want it. People sometimes go to different seminars from other states or national seminars and understand that from state to state it does vary a little bit. We would appreciate if you'd come talk to myself or Mr. Seidels before we run down another avenue, especially with regard to the open meeting law. Next slide, please, Mr. Standish. Now, this slide talks about the very first statute and all the ones that follow it with regard to public open meeting laws. Pretty much everybody that the mayor and council turns into a board or commissioner council is considered a public body. There are some very small exceptions, but suffice it to say, the historic preservation is a public body, and there is a need for an agenda. And we have posting requirements, and Mr. Standish is pretty well versed in what has to happen, but the law requires us to put that on our website. And in addition to that, we have to post it in physical places as well. Number three, I think, is the most important item on this slide. And it's something that gets lost from time to time in agenda drafting, is that there needs to be sufficient specificity with regard to each agenda item so that the public would understand and know if they want to sit and listen to what you have to say. Many times, us attorneys, we stop meetings, we get in the way, and we tell you, no, it's not sufficient or it's not specific enough so that we can have that conversation. And what it does is it gets in the way of having a good meeting. So it just emphasizes the importance of an agenda and the actual wording in the agenda. And for the most part, the business of the historic preservation or the council meetings, etc., have to be done in public. And if it's not done in public, there are lots of repercussions. And then we, of course, have minutes. Next slide, Mr. Standish, please. And that's a good segue into the power of the agenda. With an agenda, it does box you in, plain and simple. You have to have an agenda, and it has to have on it what you're going to discuss or you're going to, if there's going to be a presentation and it only says presentation, you can't have a lot of discussion. If it says presentation and discussion, that means you can present it and have discussion. If it says presentation, discussion, and action, that means it'll be presented. The members of your commission can discuss that item fully, and then at the end, we're expecting you to vote on something. And again, it has to have sufficient detail. And it's important always to remember that it's limited, that agendas actually limit what can be discussed at a meeting. You can't go outside the bounds of the agenda. Even if you have a really good topic that fits in kind of sort of into one you just discussed, it's best to say, hey, there's another item on our agenda way down called future agenda items. Let's put this on a future agenda so we can do this right. Next slide, please, Mr. Standish. This was an old attorney general's opinion, and it also parts of it have become the law. But what it comes down to is the public's rights and what the public has the right to and what they don't. And it's important to understand that they have the right to attend, to listen, not necessarily participate in, but to listen and tape or videotape or audio tape or record your meetings. They don't have a right to speak unless you have public hearings. And like it says at the top, the HPC does not hold any required public hearings that I know of. I know of lots of them for the Board of Adjustment, Planning and Zoning Commission, and of course the Mayor and Council. They have a number of them. And the other important thing to remember is the public doesn't have the right to disrupt your meetings. That's easier to regulate now that we're in Zoom, because if somebody's disruptive, then somebody in Brandon's seat gets to click the mute button on them, which I think some people don't like. Next slide, please.
I believe Lynn-Ann had a question.
What's your question, Lynn-Ann?
I actually have a comment, and that is just to let you know that we are moving forward on our local registry. Who knows how long it will actually take, but that does require a HPC hearing. And, yes. You know, it'll have the signs in the yards and the whole thing. But
And that's all fine, as long as it's listed, and then make sure that that particular agenda says public hearing before you go through it and give the public a chance to talk. I'm not as well versed in HPC as I am with PRAB, Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning Commission. But yeah, and that's fine. If you're supposed to have a public hearing, then it should list it as a public hearing.
Okay. Just wanted to let you know.
Well, no problem. And this slide's just a lot of language out of the statute and an opinion. Basically, a public body is pretty much every board, commission, and council in every city and town in the state of Arizona and their subcommittees. And a meeting is pretty much a gathering of a quorum in any way, shape, or form you can think of. And now especially it talks about you can have a quorum and have your discussion and legal action in an electronic setting. Well, that's nice, because we're all doing these electronically these days. The key item in the second bullet is proposed legal action. That is part of an attorney general's opinion that you see listed here, but just recently that was also placed in the statute, which means if somebody gets a hold of your board or commission members and say, hey, I think we should vote this way on something, I think we should vote that way on something, or you propose that you actually put something on the agenda to take action on, that one-way communication can now be, and always has been, something that could be considered an open meeting violation, even if nobody responds. None of us attorneys like that one either, but that's what's in the law. Next slide, please. And this goes back to when the statute was amended and the definitions, and you're not allowed to poll each other, so one council member or commission member can't go through and poll how everybody else is going to vote on a certain item. There are certain exceptions to that, but they're not going to be applicable here. You can't go through a third-party intermediary. You can't use staff to poll your other members of your commission or council. Or you can't use a friend. I've not seen somebody do it with friends, but it has happened in Arizona where they've used staff for that. And, communication by email, electronic media, that's really the big one. And this is basically the biggest public record part of this you'll see, is the way that somebody finds out that there's been an open meeting law violation. Probably a good 90% of the time is that they've done a public records request for the emails that were sent in and through the town server. And they put it all together, and there, voila, we've got a quorum of a board or a commission or the council having a discussion out there in cyberspace, back and forth in emails, that gets them into trouble. Next slide, please, Mike. Now, there are certain things that can be considered a open meeting law violation with regard to an illegal meeting, for lack of a better term. Discussion of certain legal action, proposing action, or taking legal action outside of the public and deliberating with respect to legal action. And it's important to know that you don't have to take legal action for there to be an open meeting issue. The discussion leading up to the actual vote or taking of legal action is also protected. So if that discussion happens outside of the presence of the public, you can end up with an open meeting violation. Next slide, please, Mike. Okay, this one comes in pieces. And you can see board member A fires an email off to board member B, who in turn fires an email off to member C and D, and now you've got a quorum. Now, it says five-member board, but I count four people here, and that would be a quorum of a seven-member board. Nonetheless, that could be considered, depending on what the communication was, especially if it was a business communication with regard to that board, commission, or council. You could have an open meeting law violation. Next slide, Mike. I remember this slide. It was done by one of our interns a long time ago. Keep going, Mike. It'll fill in. Yeah. And this one's a little clearer. And each one of these times, please understand, we're assuming that what the emails going back and forth are business related. I mean, if you're all emailing back and forth about the weather and the largest hailstone in Iowa, I don't think anybody really is that worried about your communication. But if you're talking about listing a property as a historic property or something of that nature, and this kind of communication happens where member A emails member B, who emails member D, who ends up somehow emailing member C, and it comes back to B, and you get this swirl of emails, that's pretty clearly an open meeting violation. You've had a cyberspace meeting.
Yeah, and to piggyback on Joe's comments really quick, I was just going to state, if you do send an email or a text and it's not regarding town business, that doesn't even meet the definition of a public record state law, so that would never have to be turned over for a public records request.
And just in case you're all wondering, that came from a case, actually, where a gentleman up in one of the other counties was setting up a safari in South Africa using his government email, and they discovered that all of his emails to go on this safari, they wanted to actually get a hold of them for the newspaper. They didn't disclose them, but you can just about bet that all of that information was used in his disciplinary hearing later that had nothing to do with public records or open meetings. Nonetheless, it wasn't a public record. Next slide, Mike.
Yeah, can I ask another quick question? Joe,
sure.
You may be going to address this, but it's kind of similar to this subject matter. But at some point, would you kind of explain subcommittees? Because our understanding is that I can work with a member or a couple members, but at different times, but that we can never work in even small groups that deals with subject matter. Anyways, if you'll just kind of touch on that for us.
Well, I can touch on that quick. I'm not talking about subcommittees. If you have a standing subcommittee, there are all kinds of issues, and then that subcommittee can actually have to follow open meeting protocols, and Mike would be even better to address this. If you have a standing three-member subcommittee that gets together and discusses steam pump ranch, you know, got a steam pump ranch subcommittee, but that group in and of itself and the decisions it make can be subject to public records and open meetings as well. But if you know, you're just getting together with yourself and a couple of board members to discuss something outside of the meeting, that doesn't involve a quorum in any way, shape, or form. But it can get sticky with standing subcommittees if you've got too many members and they're making decisions and they're not taking minutes and everything else. Mike, you got anything to add to that?
Yeah, just to clarify a little bit further, regarding the subcommittees, that would have to be an official subcommittee that was created by either the council or that specific board or commission. So just you meeting with, like Joe was saying, one or two other individuals, you know, that I wouldn't use the term as an official subcommittee at that point. You're just simply individuals meeting and you're not a quorum of that board or commission. So it has to be an officially created subcommittee from the council or that board or commission to qualify.
Okay, so let me just clarify this question just a little bit. If I ask for two volunteers to help me with something that we're working on with the commission, it's less, way less than a quorum, and we're bringing back that information to the commission at a later time. Can two individuals work with a staff member on subject matter for the commission?
And I say yes, because first, you didn't actually go to the board and form a subcommittee.
Okay.
A standing subcommittee. Like, if you've got a standing subcommittee, what I mean by standing subcommittee, and yeah, I understand the jargon better than most, is a subcommittee that just always exists. It never goes away. It's a permanent subcommittee formed by either the council, like Mike said, or formed by the commission to take on a task. But you yourself working with a couple members ad hoc, and that's the kind of word they use in the law, that's not going to require minutes and everything else. But, you know, you can report back your findings to the entire commission so that they can make informed decisions. Sure, that makes sense.
Perfect. Okay, thank you.
No problem. Next slide, Mike. This one's even more straightforward. Board member A emails a quorum on my item that's supposed to come before your board or commission. Yeah, that's pretty straightforward, open meeting violation, and board member A can get in trouble. And we talk about trouble on a later slide. And this is what would be called the hub and spoke, but I couldn't make a wheel very well in this slide, so it's just side-by-side rectangles with arrows. Next slide, Mike. Now, not all emails are bad. Staff's going to send out a blast. Generally, they'll put everybody's email into the BCC column so nobody can reply to all and send back an answer. Those are going to be fine, and that's the way we keep away the reply or discussion amongst officials. And emails between less than a quorum, yeah, that's fine, but understand that a quorum of your particular commission can be five people. That's where this quorum majority issue comes in. You could end up with a three-member majority or your next commission where you're going to take final action on some special thing, and you can run into some trouble there. So it's just be careful. Emails between board members or council members or commission members are dangerous because you don't know what that next board, commission, or council member is going to do with it. And like we talked about earlier, email that doesn't involve matters that may go before the board, the size of the largest hailstone in Iowa, yeah, it doesn't matter. No big deal. But again, it's just be careful. Emailing amongst yourselves can be a problem, and understand that a public records request has the potential to, and I've not seen one, but I'm knocking on wood now, actually ask for emails from somebody's private email address at their home. But I'm waiting for that to come up. We'll see where that goes. Next slide, please, Mike. Now, Here's the one why you might care about possible penalties for open meeting violations. Initially, it imposes a fine of up to $500 for the first violation plus attorney's fees. That's not too bad. Well, your second one goes up to $2,000 and it escalates from there. So it can be quite expensive for a repeat offender. And if the person's found to have violated the open meeting law, they can be removed from office by court order, and that's generally done by the Attorney General's office or the Pima County Attorney's office. Just to give you some comfort, I've been here for a long time. I don't know of anybody who's actually been removed from an office for an open meeting law violation, but I suspect that would have to be a relatively egregious violation. And the big one, though, is even if the town wants to, they can't pay your fines and they can't pay your attorney's fees. That's statutorily required. And any action you took that might well be considered an open meeting violation is declared null and void. and something I didn't add here, but if you've ratified that decision in a public meeting and done it properly ahead of time, you can cure that issue. But this is the big, you know, this is the stick followed by the carrot issue, where you can get in trouble if you violate the open meeting law in Arizona. Next slide, Mike. Okay. Here are some of my suggestions. Try not to email the entire board. And I would say email in general is kind of one of those problems. The reply to all button can be your biggest enemy. Try not to forward or copy other board members in response to emails, kind of like the earlier slides showed up. Yeah, and don't try to include comments. You might have had a discussion with Commission Member A, and then you send an email to Commission Member B. Well, now you've got three of you, and you say, hey, you know, Commission Member A told me that this issue here is supreme. They found this site where there's all these ancient hohokam, this, whatever, and we have to get that on an agenda, and then they go talk to somebody else. The key is just restrict your comments to your own. That's another safety option. Next slide, Mike. And it's up to you. You can include something like this or this particular thing at the bottom of your email, a tagline if you send things for business, to kind of warn everybody on the email, don't forward it, keep it away from other board members so you don't end up in trouble. And just so you know, the punishment that I've seen issued by the Attorney General's office here in Oro Valley was all day Saturday training to do what we're going to do here in just a few minutes. We have to take all day. It's no fun at all, and I don't think staff or the board members involved enjoy it. Next slide. And just so you know, these exceptions are not generally applicable to the HPC because they all deal with executive sessions. It's plausible that you could have to have an executive session if the board were to do something that involved one of these issues on this slide. But these are the only ways that you can have a discussion in an executive session outside of the presence of the public is to consider these issues. And the bottom note, in all caps, is more of assigned to staff members, don't try to shoehorn things in where they don't fit because that's where the trouble falls. Next slide, Mike. Yeah. This is minutes. Now, I'll cover this, but Mr. Standish is clearly the minutes guru, but the town of Oro Valley uses what are called action minutes. Action minutes comply with state law, but they are definitely not all-inclusive. The record for the town in any meeting includes the minutes, but on top of that, we also have these recordings, either audio or video and audio of the council and or commission that when added to those minutes constitute the entire record. So if we didn't record what one particular member of a board or commission actually said verbatim, that's okay. Unless there's been some kind of technical difficulty, those exact words are available to the public, but the minutes don't have to contain everything. And like it says here, date, time, place, name of those present, a general description of the matters, and all legal description of actions proposed. It's pretty straightforward. Minutes in the town of Oro Valley in most jurisdictions are kind of bland when they're action minutes. You have anything to add, Mike?
No, it pretty much covers it.
Holy cow. I would expect you to jump in on the minutes, but that's okay. Next slide, please. So now we're on to conflict of interest. And this makes a lot of this makes sense, but the statute that talks about it doesn't. What do you need to do if you have a formal conflict? Formal conflict would be one that actually comes out of statute. Next slide, Mike. Well, it has to currently exist. It can't be an old conflict. It can't be a conflict that's going to happen sometime in the future, like a potential conflict. Next slide. And the statute talks about substantial pecuniary interest of you or a close relative. And this is a list, but it's not all inclusive of who can be considered a close relative. There are always times when somebody else not on this list might be considered a close relative for the purpose of a court hearing. But substantial pecuniary interest, yeah, we'll go to the next slide and you can all have a chuckle. The law says it's an interest that is not too remote. That's really helpful. Now, remote interests include a number of things. The state legislator provides a definition on it based on undue influence. It doesn't talk about a number, but if somebody, let's say, is taking you out to a lavish dinner and their property is the subject of something that might come before the Historic Preservation Commission in the future, it may be considered substantial if it's one of those items that may influence what you're going to do. You need to ask yourself, does it deal with property or money? And will this affect you or your family? And is the interest remote? And it's best determined at the time. And understand some of these are on the next slide. Next slide, Mike. The town adopted a bunch of rules. The mayor and council adopted their rules. And they're listed as some of the items that may be considered remote interests. It's good to look at those at the time. If you have a conflict of interest, and it's all been determined, and likely you've had that discussion with me or Mr. Seidels, these are the steps you have to take. You have to disclose it at the meeting, withdraw from participating, and leave the room. It's kind of hard on Zoom, but I understand. And if you ignore the conflict, it's a Class 4 felony with fines. Very important, and what they're trying to do is stop you from being able to pay yourself. And the best example of this I have is we had a planning and zoning commissioner a long time ago who owned a bunch of R4 property, and there was discussion to add certain uses to R4 property that he was really, really happy to see come along but wanted to vote on it. And we ended up telling him, it's like, yeah, if those uses are added to R4, your property could considerably double in price, and you're the one making the vote on it, the recommendation to council, you need to basically conflict yourself out of that case. And it took a while, but it was the Class 4 felony that did make him change his mind. Next slide, please. Now you've got, this is more common, the appearance of impropriety issue. Us lawyers aren't really worried about an appearance of impropriety, but you have to live with your neighbors, your family, etc., and the people around you, and you may want to recuse yourself for an item that is not a true statutory conflict of interest. For example, you sit on the Homeowners Association board, and in the Homeowners Association you live in, there's a historical property, and you're making a consideration on that, and it's owned by the Homeowners Association. It appears improper because you're sitting on the HOA board, but there is no legal conflict, but you may want to recuse yourself from it so that people will not accuse you of all kinds of silly things like you're taking advantage of your position for the HOA, etc. But you don't have to, and the attorneys won't make you, but it's up to you. You have to live with the folks on your board and those on your commission or council or board. Next slide, please. Now, here's where the laws come from. It's pretty straightforward. The agenda comes from statute. The call to the audience isn't required by statute, but the council has a rule requiring it. Meetings, what constitute a meeting that must be done in the public? Well, talk to your staff and anybody in your attorney's office. They'll help you get there. Executive sessions are severely limited. Minutes here are mundane and boring by design. And I've just gone over conflict of interests, and we're happy to give you suggestions if you have any questions with regard to that to keep you on the right side of the law, either in my office, Mr. Standish's office, or you can talk to Lynn Ann, and then she'll probably bring you to us as well. Next slide. Time for questions, if there are any. And I'm sorry, this is probably a review for many of you, but for the new members here, this is what you would have seen if you came to one of Mike's and my presentations.
I actually have a question, and that's just very simple. Commissioner Hannestad also has his hand up, but my question is, can we get a copy of this slideshow? I'm not sure whether our two brand new commissioners that weren't here at agenda time have come, but if they have not, if they're not on today's attendance, I would love to get them a copy of this and have them listen to the minutes.
Yeah, and Mike can make sure that one of these is available.
Okay. Lynn Ann, I believe we have a copy already, so I'll make sure and know the other two commissioners have not joined the meeting.
Well, and if they haven't joined, we're going to be holding another one of these for all of the new board and commission members for all new boards and commissions not too long from now.
Okay, great. Commissioner Hannestad does have his hand raised, by the
okay.
way. Commissioner Hannestad, they said okay.
I may need to unmute him. Give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Yes, this is Steve Hannestad. I did not have any access to the presentation, so if that can be provided to me by email, I would appreciate it.
We could do that. That's not a problem. Either Brandon or Mike or somebody can make sure you have that, Mr. Hannestad.
Mr. Okay. Hannestad, I'll email you that once this meeting concludes.
Okay, and again, I believe we have an agreement in effect that whenever possible that the sort of material be provided to me in advance.
Commissioner Hannestad, that is correct. Yeah, we didn't get this presentation wrapped up until right before the meeting, so I'll make a note of it to make sure we send that to you as soon as we get it as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No one else? Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Blau, the next item?
Yes, 1 second. Mike's going to wrap up the screen share.
And because Tobin's not here, I'm going to be here for the duration with you folks. So, but I'll mute.
Get back to Brandon.
There we go. All right. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Joe. Next item is consent agenda. Item number one is review and approval of the December 7th, 2020 meeting minutes.
Do we have any discussion on the December minutes? Did everyone read them, I hope?
I'll just make a comment about them. They are the first Monday of every month. We do skip July and August, and then the September meeting is moved to Tuesday because of the holiday that falls on the first Monday. So if anybody needed it in a nutshell, there it is.
So no discussion. I move to approve the December 7th, 2020 regular session meeting minutes. May I have a second?
Do you mean, the meeting minutes? Or are you talking about the meeting schedule?
Oh, we haven't gotten to the meeting schedule yet, Lynn-Ann. We were talking about the minutes.
Oh, you were talking about the minutes. Okay, I'm sorry. I do have a comment on the minutes. I'm sorry because I just barely looked at it, and I will ask if Henry Ziff can actually help me with it. But it states that Peter Lowry was a nephew of a descendant of the town of a founding father, and he's actually a descendant of the Push family. But I don't know whose nephew. But he's a descendant of the Push family, not a founding father
okay.
of the town.
That's of all. The Push family, okay. That was during Paul Loomis's.
That was during Paul report. Loomis's comment. Yeah. So, we're called here.
Okay. But we don't know which Push member. Okay.
I don't know whose nephew he is. I think he was Walter Push's, but I can't remember.
Does Mr. Ziff know?
Henry, are you still there? Or is Paul on?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Whose nephew is Peter?
He is my mother's brother's son. So he's my first cousin. So there's no. So I think what they were referring to was that Peter is my father's nephew by marriage only.
Okay. So he's a Ziff.
Henry's cousin.
Chair Munden, member and Lynn-Ann, just so you know, the minutes are supposed to say what was actually discussed at the meeting. Even if they listed him as wrong, you can correct that in some other thing. But yeah, if you talked about something and said he was one of the founding fathers of the town, if that was what was discussed at the last meeting, that's in the minutes. We don't get to change history. That's what the minutes are for.
Well, I'm pretty sure if we listen to it, it does talk about it being a descendant, nephew is a nephew, not of a founding father. Paul wouldn't have said that. So,
and if we make that decision, we just say he's a nephew of the Push family, that's fine, because again, the recording exists.
Okay. I just barely noticed it. So,
Chairman, we also had a correction on Mr. Laurie's name, and I will make that correction. It's Lourie.
Lourie. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Anything else? I move to approve with changes the December 7th, 2020 regular session minute meetings. May I have a second?
I second.
Seconded by Mr. Hanstead. Mr.
Yes. Lau? Yep, we'll we'll do a roll call vote. Vice Chair Beal?
He's muted.
Let me get him going here. Vice Chair Beal?
I approve.
Thank you. Commissioner Honestad?
Approve.
Commissioner Kruger?
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson?
Approve.
And Chair Munden?
Approved.
Commissioner Golden and Bozeman are still not present, just to note.
Okay. May I have the next item on the agenda, please, Brendan?
And I'm sorry, this is the one I had jumped ahead to. So what I mentioned about first Mondays, et cetera, are about this agenda item.
Consent agenda item number 2 is consideration and adoption of calendar year 2021 Historic Preservation Commission meeting schedule.
Everyone has those referenced on their agenda. So I move to approve the calendar year 2021 Historic Preservation Commission meeting schedule. May I have a second?
A second.
Seconded by Mr. Wilson. Mr. Lau, the vote.
Yes, Vice Chair Beal. You muted yourself.
All right, approved.
Thank you. Commissioner Honestad?
Approve.
Commissioner Kruger?
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson?
Approve.
Chair Munden?
Approve. May I have the next agenda item, please?
Yes, next on our agenda is regular session agenda. Item number 1 is welcome new members. Joe, did I miss something?
No, you're right there. I just think since the new members haven't signed in, you might want to skip over this and welcome them next time.
We do have one.
I would like one of the new members here today?
We have one, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. We would like to introduce Stephanie Kruger, who is a very active watcher of our meetings, and we're thrilled to have her on our up commission. I believe she's probably the youngster amongst us. Welcome, Stephanie Kruger, Commissioner Kruger. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Mr. Would you like to say something about yourself? How long have you been in Oro Valley?
Sure. We moved here from Wisconsin about 4 years ago, and I've been active in some of the arts and culture organizations in Tucson, and we love it here, and I'm really excited about the work that this commission does, and I was able to take a tour that was offered in December of Steampunk Ranch, and that was very informative. No, it wasn't. I'm sorry that I missed you, but it was very informative, and I love that they do that and give people in the community an opportunity to learn about the wonderful historical, you know, buildings and places that we have here.
We also have an art public art tour, art and cultural ambassador for the town. And when you said tour, I thought maybe you had taken a public art tour, which is going to be on your list. So
I look forward to it.
Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next is regular session agenda item number 2, election of Historic Preservation Commission chair.
Okay, I'd like to open the floor for nomination of chair.
Am I allowed chair to speak Bunyan? Up for a minute, Joe?
Go right ahead, Lennon.
I just want to lay it out to the rest of the commission that I know that Gail would like to do more of this since she had a shortened term. So just an FYI in case you want to know if you should ask for someone to be the chair for next year.
Chair Munden?
Yes.
Mike Wilson here. It's my pleasure to nominate Commissioner Munden for chairmanship of the HPC for the year 2021.
Thank you.
I second.
Thank you, Mr. Hanstead. It was moved by Commissioner Wilson and seconded by Commissioner Hanstead.
Help you out here. Generally, what happens is you make your motion and your second on the first one, and then you vote on it and decide if you need to nominate any more people. A lot of times it takes care of itself.
So I open it up for a vote from Brandon. Is that correct, Brandon? Okay. Brandon, a vote, please.
Yes. Vice Chair Beal.
I'm in favor. Aye.
Commissioner Honestad.
Aye.
Commissioner Kruger.
Aye.
Commissioner Wilson.
Approve.
And Chair Munda.
I'll be glad to.
All right.
Welcome.
Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes. Regular session agenda item number 3 is election of Historic Preservation Commission vice chair.
I'd like to open up the floor for nominations of vice chair. This person would step in and chair at any meeting function that I am unable to be here. I would like to nominate Dan Beal for the very same reasons. We have not had a chance, and I believe that he'll do fine if he's needed. I move to elect Dan Beal. May I have a second?
I second, Mike Wilson.
Thank you, Commissioner Wilson. Mr. Lau, the vote.
Yes, Vice Chair Beal.
Oh, you muted yourself again.
You muted yourself.
Okay, yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Hondestad.
Approve.
Commissioner Kruger.
Aye.
Commissioner Wilson.
Approve.
And Chair Munden.
Approved.
All right.
Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Next is regular session agenda item number 4, discussion and possible action regarding the annual report assignment.
Okay, I would like to preface this a little. It was my idea that the chair do the annual report at this time. I just thought that I did it last year, and I thought that the information that it contained would be really important for the chairman to have. And since I'm hoping that in another year or so, someone else will take the chairmanship, and so that I won't have to do it year after year, but it's not that difficult to do. And so unless someone would like to volunteer to do it, I'm more than happy to do the annual report. Any input? Okay. I move to approve that the annual report will be compiled by Gail Munden. Can we have a second?
I second that.
Seconded by Stephanie Kruger. Brandon, can we have a vote?
Yes, Vice Chair Beal.
Approve.
Commissioner Honestad.
Approve.
Commissioner Kruger.
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson.
Approve.
And Chair Munden.
Accepted. Approved.
All right.
Now, the second item is that the annual report be presented at the February 1st meeting. I have to go out of town for a couple weeks, and I hope it's not extended any longer, but I believe I can still get it done by the February 1st meeting. So I'm going to move that the annual report be presented at the February 1st, 2021 meeting. May I have a second?
Seconded.
Okay, who was that? Was that Steve Hannestad seconding it? Or?
Yes, if no one else were used to.
Yeah.
Okay, can we have a vote? Oh, it's seconded by Steve Hannestad?
Yes.
Okay.
Do we need to vote on this one? Is it an action item? Or is it just a first and a second? Okay.
Agenda item number 4.
Chair Munden made the motion, so we can vote on it and make it official.
Okay, perfect.
All right, so Vice Chair Beal?
You're muted again.
Approve.
Thank you. Commissioner Honestad?
Approve.
Commissioner Kruger?
Approve.
Commissioner Wilson?
Approve.
And Gail Munden?
Approve.
Chair Munden, my apologies.
Mr. Lau, the next item.
Next on the agenda is a regular session agenda item number 5, discussion and possible action of assignments for the Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan.
Mrs. Dellerman, please explain the assignments and details regarding this item.
Okay, the Oro Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan originally was prepared in 2011. And it was last revised in 2015 and is to be viewed and determined whether it needs to be revised as close to annually as possible. And obviously, we've let that go slide for a while. So this plan provides a guide for moving forward in developing and maintaining historic properties and programs. 6 components are identified, each of which contains suggested action items. We would like commissioners to volunteer to help with research and next steps, kind of digging deeply on these topics and bring back a report for us to decide for future agenda items and for action items, et cetera, for our update. So this could take many meetings to complete. So the number one is public preparation. Sorry. Public participation and heritage education. Currently, our biggest heritage education projects are the fourth grade essay contest. And then we also recognize and support the Historical Society's education done in their tours. Yeah, I'm sorry. And in Chair Munden, what is it that they do? They have meetings that...
the education things that they have at the library? Yes.
They're not called seminars, but you get what I mean. Those things.
Education opportunities.
Mm. Yeah, education opportunities. Okay. Historic Steam Pump Ranch is another one that we want to update, look at where we are in terms of the plan and what... where we'll be when we're done with some of the things that are being done currently, et cetera. Historic neighborhoods, again, those are called out in the plan, but also in Rock Art Ranch residents, Rock Art Ranch residents and neighborhoods, whatever.
Rock Art Ranch and residents, which I haven't seen.
Yeah. Okay. And that will come to you, but this is pieces of it is in this plan. Okay. This is a breakdown. Town history records and reports, which is basically taking all of the things through history that have been compiled. So the Historical Society is doing a really good job of keeping that kind of stuff, but we do have big scrapbooks in Town Hall. So that's the kind of thing. So we might want to look a little deeper, see what's missing, see what we need to do to update that and work with the Historical Society. Undeveloped areas of the town, which is, there's getting to be less and less of those. And then Honeybee Village Archaeological Preserve, that will take some work with the with Pima County, as that is currently still managed by them. The Historic Preservation Commission should review this plan annually. In this stage, the commission will decide which components, if any, should be reviewed to be discussed at a future meeting. Based on these reviews, the commission may make recommendations to town staff, who will coordinate the plan into an annual Historic Preservation Commission work plan. So today's goal is briefly discuss each component and assign or ask for volunteers of commissioners to review their components and to provide feedback at a future meeting. Future goals: provide feedback on assigned components, prioritize items to be addressed, and create a work plan for 2021 on commission priorities.
Okay, so I've read this a few times, mm-hmm. and it's not that helpful. I would like to make it more helpful with more facts and not just, oh, this is what we need to do, and so that it actually is worth our time, putting our time into it. And so I think that everybody needs to read it 3 times. And since we don't have all of our commissioners here, do we want to wait another month and to do this list, or are you gonna, we have 5 people here, so there's 6.
I think I'll ask
Mr. Andrews?
Mr. Andrews, if it's okay, but I think it's okay to put it off for another month and send a note to those 3 or 2 and ask them to review and ask these members to review as well, and then bring it back.
It makes perfect sense for the commission at this time, because you don't have all of your members and you think it's a good idea to continue this to your next meeting and then put some pressure on those that didn't show up so the assignments can be made and then they can be informed assignments.
Okay. Do I need to make a motion to delay that? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I move to postpone the assignments for the Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan until all commission members can be contacted or the next meeting, whichever. Can I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Dan Beal. Can we have a vote?
Yeah. Vice Chair Beal.
Approved to move the meeting. Move the agenda there.
Commissioner Honestad.
Approved.
Commissioner Kruger.
Approved.
Commissioner Wilson.
Approved.
And Chair Munden.
Approved. And I want to tell everyone to read it at least 3 times, because then it starts sinking in what's not there. And so, Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes. Next is regular session agenda item number 6, presentation and discussion regarding historic preservation topics for certified local governments.
Mrs. Dellerman, what presentation do you have for us today?
Yes. Brandon, can you please show that presentation?
Yep. I'm pulling it up right now. Give me 1 second.
Also, you all have a copy of it in what was sent out by Marianne. So you do have a copy, Commissioner Honestad.
Sure. Sorry about that. Let's make it full screen now. Ready when you are, Linnan. Everybody can see that, correct?
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So this is really to kind of dig down, since our we are a certified local government, and kind of learn a little bit more where that comes from and a little bit more about our role as a historic or a certified local government. So local preservation. Oh, next slide, please. Local preservation planning. So this is mission and objectives as you can find them in the Historic Preservation Code 6-10, which is our code. That's the one we follow. And it is hereby declared as a matter of public policy that the town of Oro Valley joins the United States of America and the state of Arizona in promoting and the protection, enhancement, and perpetuation of properties, areas, documents, and artifacts of historic, cultural, and archaeological and aesthetic significance as being necessary for the economic, cultural, educational, and general welfare of the public. This is done pursuant to the provisions of the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966 as amended, and the Arizona Revised Statute and the establishment of the Historic Preservation Ordinance by the Town of Oro Valley Town Council. So again, that's 6-10. Next slide. So the history of the certified local governments, otherwise I'll shortcut it a lot of times as the CLGs, which we are. With the passage of the National Historic Preservation Act in 1966, the federal government embarked on a new era of leadership in the preservation of our nation's historic properties. In 1980, Congress established a framework for local preservation programs. So that's kind of where we fall in, local preservation programs, through an amendment to the National Historic Preservation Act. And that's what this is. The certified local government is, that's the description of it. Arizona State Historic Preservation Office is the next slide, please. So the act encouraged the establishment of the State Historic Preservation Office, which you'll often hear me call SHPO, in each state, including partnerships among federal, tribal, state, and local governments. Today, all 50 states have a State Historic Preservation Office, and that serves as the primary contact for local government. So that's who I work with, and who we, like everything that we need to get passed, if we want grants or what have you, and also the document that we were just talking about, it was originally approved by SHPO, and they have copies of that Rock Art Ranch and the condensed document that we just talked about, and they approved it along with the council. So it serves as the primary contact, and federal funding for state and local partnerships pass through SHPOs, and those are called pass-through grants. This is where we apply for many of our funding projects that have been approved. Next slide. So the National Historic Preservation Act established the value of historic properties to the public. Its major provisions apply at the local, state, tribal, and national levels, and guide historic preservation and cultural resource management today. This program recognizes political subdivisions of Arizona, such as cities, towns, and counties. I know that's repetitive, but again, this states that we then apply to SHPOs to become a certified local government, and then we can participate in local and state preservation initiatives to protect and preserve Arizona's cultural heritage. Okay, next slide. So what do we do in return? A CLG designation signifies that a municipality has entered an agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office and the National Park Service to commit to work collaboratively to fulfill the goal of preserving, protecting, and increasing awareness of heritage resources. So this is a home from the Suffolk Hills neighborhood. And you can see that's not the way they build houses anymore. So it has a heritage significance or cultural significance for our community. Next slide. So where does the HPC fit in? Historic Preservation Commissions possess local preservation ordinances. Oh, CLGs possess local preservation ordinances and historic preservation commissions. So that's what they are. And they and possess and processes to identify and designate significant historic properties worthy of preservation. They also possess professional staff to administer their program. CLGs play an active role in assisting the state in the process of nominating properties within their jurisdiction. So again, that's our role. So I know that the whole thing didn't come out that's underneath those two pictures, but what those two pictures are is the Forest Lodge was Tucson's first distinctly in, international building or international style building. In 1935, the Countess of Suffolk commissioned Tucson architect Richard A. Morris to design this house. It is located on East McGee Road and is now part of the Catholic school that's up there in Oro Valley and will help as we work towards the neighborhood designation for the Suffolk Hills neighborhood, because that's significant in itself that we have that home as part of that those neighborhoods throughout there. They were that was her property. Last slide, please. Oro Valley's conservation efforts. So this is just a list of the ordinances as mentioned in the last slide, as well as on the first. So so if you want to go back to this and review what, and this is a lot of the work that we plan on doing this year as Chair Munden and I have talked. We already talked or have talked about doing the Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan. That's what we just went over. But the Environmentally Sensitive Land Ordinance, it regulates it has regulations to implement the Oro Valley General Plan by conserving natural, scenic, hillside, and cultural resources. So that in the ESL are regulations, and that's where the planning department uses that document heavily and make sure that that our cultural resources are protected. So if there's archaeology found in there, someplace where there is no building yet, then they have to come up with a treatment plan and work with archaeologists. So that's in place. The Oro Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan we just worked on. Article 6-10 is the preservation code that guides the Historic Preservation Commission. And it is intended to identify and preserve historic properties, promote the use of historic properties for education, pleasure, and welfare of the people of the town, foster civic pride in the accomplishments of the past, protect and enhance Oro Valley's attractiveness and stimulate the economy, stabilize and improve property values of rehabilitated and protected sites, provide incentives for restoration, and provide standards for restoration and designated properties and for new construction within historic districts. So if somebody wants to change something to their historic home to make sure it falls within what's regulated or it becomes not part of the area designation. And then Rock Art Ranch and Residence. I'm sorry, that was the one I couldn't remember the name of earlier, but it is a cultural resource inventory in the town and Oro Valley planning area. And I will make sure that gets sent out because that is an extremely larger document for which the pieces of the Oro Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan were taken. So, and that's the end of today's education for the commission. Is there any questions? Because you are allowed some comments if you'd like. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next item is department update.
Okay.
Back to you, Mrs. Dillon.
Yeah. This is where I get to talk just a whole bunch, two things in a row. So the Historical Society provided tours, as mentioned by their new president, and they did it in a very COVID-safe manner. They sent me some wonderful pictures of them in their masks and having their thermometer out and hand sanitizer. And so I know that they're going to continue into January, and they're being so cautious, and I'm very grateful that that education is still being able to continue in a COVID safe manner. And then due to the COVID numbers soaring in Arizona, we are looking into offering Second Saturday vendors the opportunity to showcase their items in a Steam Pump Ranch virtual arts and antique vendor location. And I'll talk to you a little bit more about that, but that's just to help provide them some resource during this time when, you know, they're not able to come out and sell. And it helps keep Steam Pump Ranch in the forefront of importance for people who like arts, you know, that type of item for their home or for their, for gift giving, et cetera. And then, I have mentioned that we submitted paperwork for the possibility of having our local designation process be selected by the U of A's public administration graduation students as a capstone project. This would allow us to get at least one house on the registry, but also open the door for us to have, you know, have done it, and then it'll be easy after that. So we have moved to the next level. So things are looking very good in the process of us being selected. And we are hopeful that students will select this project upon their return to be classified or to, sorry, to return to their classes in mid-January. So that's very hopeful. So one more level, and I think we will know by our next meeting if we've been selected as a project. And then the movie screen at Steam Pump Ranch has been removed and the drive-in movies are no longer being offered. This was a very nice way for us to offer a COVID safe activity for our families. However, it was loud and it was time for us to wrap that up. Although we are grateful that we got to expose more people to the ranch and provide something for families. We are hopeful that with precautions, we can again have some in-person activities in the ranch by this coming summer, the summer of 2021. So with that in mind, our annual Celebrate Oro Valley actually happens prior to summer. And so I think I have mentioned, and I know Chair Munden does know, that we are going to hold that as a 6-day virtual event. She will be actually doing that art tour or piece, a very small piece, because she can only get so much done in time for that video. But it will introduce those art tours along with the other subject matter from our pillars, the Oro Valley 5 pillars, and the highlight of the horses in the Southwest, which was one of our essay questions. So I'll report more and give you a few more details in future agendas, so our future department reports. But that's the end of this report. Does anybody have any questions?
Lenann, there's no discussion on the department update.
Huh? Oh, there's no discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dellerman. Mr. Lau, the next item, please.
Yes, next is future agenda items.
The Historic Preservation Commission may bring forth general topics for future meeting agendas. This is a very important time for you to bring up the items. Discussion must be limited to clarification. Commission members, do we have any items to add to a future agenda?
Chair Munden, Mike Wilson here. May we get an update on the Alexander property in Oro Valley Country Club regarding the variance request? And just a follow-up report on that from Lynn-Ann.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have an update right now, but I certainly will look into it for a future agenda.
Thank you.
And then we don't have to ask about the Oro Valley Cultural Heritage Preservation Plan to be on there because we voted that. I think that's going to be a big one if we handle that next. Going to take up a lot of time. Anyone have anything else? Okay, seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at 6:22 p.m. May I have a second?
I second.
Thank you. So, seconded by Stephanie. All in favor? All aye.
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 Thank you. Good evening.